start of the day.
Good evening. I'd like to call this evening's Monroe City Council meeting to order for March 12, 2013. And at this time, we'd ask if Edie would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gehring.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble. Hanford. And Student Representative Hirano.
Cross.
Yes, Student Representative Hirano is at La Crosse, and I don't know about Councilmember Hanford or Gamble. No, Councilmember Gamble did say he wasn't going to be here last week.
Councilmember Gamble did say that.
That's right. Okay, good. All right, we're moving straight into comments from citizens. After the pledge.
After the pledge.
Wait.
That's awesome.
All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And please let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is entering the chambers. Okay, now moving on to comments from citizens. This time is set aside for citizens to speak at the City Council on any issue except a quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Request that you limit time to 5 minutes, provide name and address. For the record, we have two people in the audience this evening. Would either of you like to address council this evening? No, they've responded, so we'll move on then to the consent agenda. And Councilmember Gehring.
I think I'd like to poll number one, and then I'd like to make a motion to approve consent agenda item number two.
All right. Councilmember Williams.
I'd like to poll number two.
Okay.
So we'll do them individually.
All right. We'll do them individually. And first, Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. So this is a resolution authorizing the dollar vote for a 10% sales tax. Actually a quick statement. I just want to say as a citizen, I am thankful that we have a city council that would consider taking this to the voters rather than just doing it on their own. I think that's different. We're different here than in other cities, and there's a chance, whether yay or nay, for the voters to weigh in on this, and I think that's really important. It's one of the things that we've talked about in the past is before, rather than just increasing taxes, taking those things to the voters. So I appreciate the rest of council doing this, putting out there. We've got a track record of doing that for a chance for people to say yay or nay to it. And the merits, of course, to be decided in August or November.
August.
In August. We've taken other things to the boards as well, the police-related items that everyone's very aware of. And so it's good for people to weigh in, so they clearly have their say. And this one is no different. So with that, I would make a motion to approve consent agenda item number one.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback to approve consent agenda item number one. Any further comments, questions? All right. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. Councilmember Williams.
Brad, can you just explain what give us kind of the 50,000 foot view of what this multi-jurisdictional program for public information is all about?
It's related to the National Flood Insurance Program Community Rating System, which we participate in, and the Community Rating System, depending on what efforts the city takes to reduce flood losses, gives people within the city of Monroe flood insurance discounts on their insurance policies. It's based on a point system, and the more stuff we do, the more points we get, which gives us a better rating, which gives people lower insurance rates. They've rewritten the manual, and now rather than doing the stuff we just used to do individually, they give you more points if you create a program for public information, which basically includes the all the stuff we've been doing, but now it's just in one document, says we do it all, rather than documenting how we do things individually. The multi-jurisdictional part is just to coordinate the information that goes out to people across jurisdictional lines. So someone who lives on the north side of Old Owen Road doesn't get different information than someone who lives on the south side of Old Owen Road. It's the same water that's going by their house.
Okay, so this is just a procedural thing?
It's just a procedural thing, right.
Okay, so there's... It's the title of this is very... misinformed me. I was thinking something about public information and was confused about floods and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Well, with that said, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda item.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Gary to approve consent agenda item number 2. Any further questions, comments? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And let the record show that Councilmember Gamble has now entered the chambers and did vote in the affirmative in the last action item. So, okay, we are moving on to final action number 1. Authorize the mayor to sign collective bargaining agreements. Ben.
Evening, Council. For you is 3 collective bargaining agreements for public works and parks, clerical and supervisors, also known as non-uniformed personnel, not related to the police department. The contract's 4 years. There's an elimination of sick leave payout for new hires effective 1/1/2013. As most of you know, that will greatly reduce the city liability. The paying out of sick leave when people quit or terminated, any of that stuff. Increase in wages, 0 in the first year, 0 to 2 with a min-max in 14 and 15, and 0 and 2.5 min-max in the final year of 2016. Premium co-pays for insurance is in 2013, 1%, 3% in the second year, 5% in the third, and 7% in the fourth year. Questions off of me?
There are no questions. So the Councilmember Hanford.
I make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign the agreement between the City of Monroe and the public, professional and office clerical employees and drivers local union number 763, representing the public works and parks, clerical and supervisors bargaining units.
Second.
A motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Camp. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I do have a question for Ben. I noticed on the step matrix for the clerical, there was one step that was not 5%, it was 5.25%.
Mm-hmm.
Is that intentional or was that a mistake?
That must have been from the past. We didn't redo the steps at all during this bargaining agreement. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that's always been in there. Why, I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to be consistent and I'm voting no on all of these contracts, and I'll just state several of the reasons that I have a problem with the definition of full-time being anyone who works over 16.2 hours a week being considered full-time, and the contract it stated is 70 hours a month. Section 1.7, giving paid time off of 48 hours, which is a week and a day, for the union reps to do union business. Not sure why the city pays for that instead of the union if it's to do business on behalf of them. I think as we're not out of the recession yet and the cost, we've made some strides. I don't think we went far enough on some of the things that we need to get our arms around. Several of the things, 2.5 weeks is a minimum, 5.2 weeks is a maximum for weeks of vacation a year, I think is excessive. I think if most people in the community would think that's excessive. That's on top of the potential of 13 days of sick leave. The 6-step increase is a 5% a year. You know, it's a substantial 30% increase over the life of that. The little things too that start adding up, just like that we pay for people's shoes. You know, for these roles. I made that the analogy that I can't imagine showing up for a construction job with bare feet and expecting the company to pay for me to go buy a pair of boots. Things like the Teamsters pension plan, the welfare trust, the life insurance, the deferred compensation, all that stuff adds up to where, you know, we have a potential of a $61,000 employee costing the city $84,000 a year. And it's just, I don't think it's in tune with reality. what I think the general public thinks is going on here. And so for those reasons, I'm going to vote no on them. I'm pleased that we were able to get some of the stuff that we tried to get done and stop a little bit of the bleeding, but I just think in general, I don't think we've made a big enough step in the right direction. So.
All right, any other questions, comments, statements? Okay, we have a motion on the floor then. We will at this time take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Pass. Member Williams in opposition. Okay, this is one of those things that we hope to have figured out next week's Legislative Affairs Committee, but we're going to recess at this time, reconvene in study session. So we're now recessed, reconvened. So first on our study session topic is discussion of the utility billing late fee and utility billing policies. And Diane.
Hello. I'm here to talk to you about two things, utility billing policies and late fees. I hope you've had a chance to read in your packets because it's kind of self-explanatory. The policies, this is a housekeeping issue. These are policies that we have been doing, but the state auditor said that we should have them administratively. We have implemented these policies because they work, and it was like they evolved over time. But the auditor said that we should actually have these approved by our legislative body. So I'm bringing them to you now, and we'll quick go over them real fast. But if you're in agreement, if you want to change anything, we will. If you don't, I'd like to bring them in the form of a resolution at a next meeting and have you formally adopt them. The payment arrangements, we used to do them over the phone and then we quit doing them now. Our policy says we have to be on the form and everything because we got into a situation of he said, she said, people go, I talked to a city employee, I don't know who it was, and they said, you know. So, you know, we just said it's got to be in writing on our form and approved and all. Tenant billing, same thing. We don't do it over the phone anymore because we would have tenants calling us up going, charge the owner. And the owner would say, what are you doing? Now everything's just done on forms. We have a process. And that's what this is. Irrigation meters, that's just just saying again what the code says. We have to spell it out a lot with homeowners associations. The late fee and shutoff fee, minimum dollar amounts, it's not worth our while financially to ding people for if they owe $5 or less or to shut them off if they owe $20 or less. It's just not practical and it's petty and draconian for us to do so. So we just don't.
How do you feel about that?
Well, and then we do lien properties. If they go beyond 60 days, we give them an intent to lien notice. And if they go beyond 90 days not paying, we lien the property and send them to collection. And we've done that forever, way before I even came on board. And the account is charged all the lien fees, lien release fees, collection fees, everything. And we don't let it go beyond 4 months because then we lose our lien rights. And a lot of times when properties get really delinquent, they're usually up for sale. And then once it goes into escrow, that's how we get paid. If we have the lien on the property, we don't lien the property, we don't get paid. Foreclosures is a policy that's come about in the last year or so, and it's we used to not have an issue with this, but now with the mortgage bubble burst, the banks are so overloaded with foreclosures that they take sometimes 6 months to a year to a year and a half to process a foreclosure. Whereas in the past, what would happen is people would be late on their payments, the bank would come in, kick you out of the house, take over the house. Bing, bing, boom, it would happen. Nowadays, that doesn't happen because they're so overloaded. So the house will sit empty for a year or so, and the bank hasn't formally foreclosed. It's still in the old person's name, but they walked away from it. And so we're sending them these monthly bills and everything, and they're like, why are you billing us? We're out of it and all. So it's become like a no man's land and nobody's paying and everything. So just to simplify things, what we do is if the bank has kicked the people out of the house, if nobody's living there, we want to stop all payments. And then once it switches over to the bank, we resume the payments. And we have an actual procedure where people have to submit paperwork showing that it's in foreclosure and whatnot. If someone's living there, by no means do we waive fees. We have to pay if someone's living there. But as soon as the house becomes vacant, and if it's in foreclosure, we don't know how long it's going to sit, and it's really unfair to the person that's walked on and moved on because they're trying to get their life back into shape, and here we are trying to turn them over to collections, and it's like they've walked away from the house, why should we turn them over to collections? And, so it just is a smoother process if we just wait for the bank to take it over and then resume, and that's the foreclosure policy. And so does council have any feelings or thoughts of anything you want changed on these policies? They've all come about by practice. You know, we've tweaked them over time. Like, we would try this, and then try that, and all, and, you know, these are what works for us. But nothing's carved in stone.
Councilmember Pettibet.
Thank you. Diane, I just had a question on the fee matrix that you had. You had other cities listed in comparing. Did you look at other policies from other cities as far as the general policy?
We talked to other cities. Like, when as we're developing these, we'll call other cities and go, what do you do about this? What do you do about that? But no, I don't have any formal matrix.
I just, you know, looking at it, it doesn't appear that we've missed anything. Mm-hmm. You know, and I agree with these policies. I just didn't know if, in comparing them to other cities, if we're missing anything since this is the first time that we're putting it to paper.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
But like I say, this will be approved by council by resolution, so if things come up in the future, we'll just bring them back to you.
Okay. I do think it's very important if you're doing payment arrangements to get it in writing. I think that's...
Yeah. And the form, too, has been approved by our city attorney, and it has all the provisions about... So that people understand that the minute they renege on it, they're cut off immediately. And if they're continually, you know, making arrangements and not following through, then they're not allowed to make arrangements anymore. And, I mean, it spells out, the form is really clear about who's responsible for what.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Davis.
The late fee, I think that's the only thing that I have an issue with. And if we go from 1.5%, with a minimum of $5 essentially means that most people are going to get a late fee of $5, but to go to 10% seems like...
The late fees, yeah. Let me go back to those. The whole purpose behind the late fees, what the reason those came about was the way when we figure out the rate structure for the utility, we take the costs of running the utilities and split it up among the customers. And it seems unfair. A lot of the delinquencies and late accounts, they are very costly for us to operate. A lot of labor intensive, the things go into them. So it seems unfair that the people who make the effort to pay their bill on time every month, why should they bear the costs of these delinquencies? By shifting the costs to the delinquent accounts, then the people who are incurring these services are paying for them. Our hope also, you're right, it's a huge shift from 1.5% to 10%. And the whole idea is to make the customers aware that this is a priority bill. This is not a bill that you can just shove off. A lot of customers will incur the late fee and then they'll pay later. We would like to make this more of a priority bill for them where they will pay it on time. And the thing is, for those who truly have a need and cannot pay the late fee, we make payment arrangements. As soon as you make a payment arrangement, you are waived of all late fees. You do not have to pay any late fees and if you make a payment arrangement. And so we do make allowances for the people who are definitely in a hardship situation. But these are for the people that just, we get a lot of people that call and they're mad that they're charging a late fee and they go, well, I just didn't have time to look at my mail and things like that. Those are the kind of excuses we're getting. We're like, well, you know, we can't control that. And so the idea is to force people to make this a priority and to make them bear the costs that we incur administering these delinquent fees.
If it's going to be a large late fee, would it be possible to have a day or two grace period to deal with these things? It seems to me that it's pretty cut and dry, and then after that, you're...
Well, our hope is that we will do outreach. We're going to have two mailings of outreach to tell the customers about this fee structure. And then the idea is the bill is due on the first last day of the month. And so, let's see, the late fee. Yeah, the late fee comes right away. We talked about that in the finance committee, and it's very few that pay within just a few days. The majority of these people are waiting until it's shut off time.
Well, do you yield for a question?
Sure.
Diane, how long between the time that the bill is sent out and the bill is due?
A good 25 days.
So you have 25 days from receipt of the bill to go through your mail, find the bill, and pay it. Before, and then how many,
the next day.
The next day. So essentially you have 26 days to pay your bill.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Any further council member Davidson?
The only other thing I can think of is I don't get paid this way, but a lot of people get paid monthly. The city pays on the 7th, and other people, I'm not sure what they're paid. Schedule is. That's the only thing I'm thinking about there. The due date is the 1st, and then anything after, right after that, you go into a late fee. That's my concern. There's just not any kind of give in there. Even if we had a day or two grace period, that's something you could plan on.
We would have to say that. We might as well say that the due date is the 2nd of the month, because this bill is recurring in nature. It's every month. It's not a shock that you're going to have a water bill, because it's coming every month. So
it is a shock sometimes when you see that.
Yeah, I've got this. And
this is what he gets doing.
So the idea is that you have to sooner or later at some point say uncle. And say, if you don't pay by this date, you're going to have to pay a late fee. And that forces people to pay on time. We don't know. Everybody has a different scenario of when they get their revenue. For instance, we have a large group that are on Social Security. And I think they get their checks the last day of the month or the first day of the month. And it's really funny. There's a large group of them that have no problem paying their bill. They pay their bill on time every month. But then there's a smaller group that their big complaint is, well, I have to wait for my Social Security check. And so I think it's just human nature. There's going to be some people that, regardless of when their pay date is, they're going to make their bills fit in. And there's a certain percentage of people that are not going to make it fit in, that they're always going to have an excuse. And that's what we're attempting to address here, is the people who always have an excuse.
I think what's key there is that people that seem to always have an excuse, because they have narrowed, done some looking at the repeat offenders, I guess, and there is a pretty consistent group of individuals who are repeatedly paying their bills late. It's a pretty small group, but almost every month they're late, we're turning off, we're having to go through that whole process.
Yeah, we have a total of 5,500 accounts. We have about 300 accounts that we call problem accounts. And they're the same ones month after month. And they're always finding an excuse. There's always the stories that the gals can tell you, they can go on for hours. But the idea is we're trying to address those people. There are always some people that are having temporary hardship times. And they'll call us. And we're like, no problem. Come down or let us email or fax you a form, sign it, tell us what date you can pay, tell us what works for you. We bend over backwards to help anyone who's having a hard time. But these are the people, what this is trying to address is those 300 customers that they're just, no matter what we do, they're always going to have a story for us.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I was going to reiterate some of what you just said. During our committee meeting, we talked about that same issue about, you know, that seems like a big jump. It is a big jump. It's not abnormal compared to what other departments are doing as far as the fee schedule and things like that. And one of the things that we talked about was trying to eliminate the amount of human intervention required. And those 300 accounts probably take, you know, I don't remember the percentage, but they take an extra percentage of time than what the rest of the accounts in the city do. And so we're trying to eliminate some of the human intervention that's required as part of doing that. And as the mayor pointed out, that's what we were told as well, that it's, there's a small group that pays the same bill late every single month. And like anything else, you're going to pay the person screaming the loudest first. And, you know, we just want to get higher up on the priority, because I think why we came up with, or why we left it at what Diana recommended. So.
Thank you, Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. Diane, question about foreclosures. So you've got, yeah, if the property is vacant, you know, in mold, how is that verified? And how do you know for sure that it's vacant yet? Because that looks like that's when, okay, so we're gonna turn the water off at that time.
Yeah, we turn off the water.
Some people are saying, there are people really want to gain assistance.
We turn off accounts, and then part of our procedures, once an account is turned off, a week later, if it's still turned off, we have Public Works go by and drive by and see that it's still off and that there's no consumption. And if it does look like it's been turned back on, we lock it. Ultimately, we will remove the meter if so that they can't access water. But we follow up on all accounts that are off.
And so the week, why not just lock it?
Because locks are expensive and we don't have that many. We don't have enough for all the chefs. I mean, we would buy more, but most people are pretty good.
Give it a week.
Yeah.
Go check it out at that time.
There are some accounts we know we set up the next day.
Okay. So for you know for sure you're going to go out there and
some accounts, yeah, we monitor daily. That's a very small group. But for most foreclosures, the staff is talking to them a lot on the phone because they're having a hard time. And so we generally have a pretty good feel and have an address of where they're at now. And it's different than where the home. And our meter guys, they go through the city a lot. They're pretty familiar with what's going on. And they go back and check the ones that are off.
Again, I also appreciate the comments about shifting burden to the delinquency and not having all the residents have to pay for people who are trying to game the system. And I'm absolutely in support of that, so I appreciate that was taken into consideration. You know, really trying to deal with the people who, and that really should follow. Personally, I think it should follow. And if it's the people that are really trying to game it, there's a way to actually determine that. So I appreciate it. And
thank you, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Thank you, Diane, for the charts and everything. Just a question. If someone was to go in, they knew they were going to leave town for 3 weeks, is there a way to pay, say you pay $100 or more on your bill? Oh, that just get discounted the next month from your bill? Is that how that works?
We will always take money in advance. Always. There are some people that carry credit balances on their account. Very few, but there are some. They all have Arizona addresses. And if someone's going to be gone for like 3 months at a time, they can sign up for a vacation, where we waive some of the fees. But people can pay in advance. We also, you know, nowadays in our electronic world, we have a lot of people that pay on vacation because you can pay on the internet. You can go on the internet and pay your water bill. You can call us up and pay your water bill. You no longer have to mail it. So, we've had a few people call us and they're on the middle of vacation. All of a sudden they remember, oh, golly, I forgot my water bill. You know, and they'll call us and we're happy to take their phone.
Thank you, Councilmember Kedovic.
Thank you. Diana had a couple questions about the fee structure also. The shutoff notice is new, that's $20, is that?
We used to not charge for it.
Okay, yeah. But you're asking for a $20 charge for that? That's a recommended change. And that's just a notice that goes that saying we're going to shut you off? But
it's a delinquency notice fee. It says you have now been charged a late fee, and if you don't pay by such and such a date, you're going to be shut off. And you're being charged $20 for the cost of this notice.
So that's the cost of the notice. And then when you shut off, there's also a $75 cost of the shut off.
Yeah.
So if somebody's late, they're going to get a shut off notice fee or a notice within how many days?
The 26th of the following month.
Okay, that's when they'll get the notice. And that'll be a $20 charge automatically, even if they don't get it shut off.
Yeah. And then if they still don't pay, then
they shut off. And they're charged $75. Is there a fee to turn it back on?
No.
So there's no fee to turn it back on?
No.
So are you hoping that this $20 notice fee charge is a deterrent?
Yes.
That when they get the late notice, they're going to pay? I mean, at that point, once they're late, they owe the late charge. And then they have until the 26th of the month before they get a notice of shut off.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's usually around the 15th. Yeah, okay. If the bill's due on the end of the month, so then on the 1st of the next month, we're hitting them with a late fee. Then around the 15th of the month, we're sending off the shut off notice.
Okay, so that's not the 26th, it's the 15th.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I misspoke. The shut off is on the 26th of the month.
Okay. Oh, the shutoff date is. Yeah. Okay.
And that's when they charge the 75 for recovery.
Okay. Well,
you for a comment.
Sure.
So we discussed, one of the things we discussed at the committee was that the effort to shut off and turn back on is fairly substantial because we have to schedule it, send someone out there to physically do it. Then once it gets resolved, figure that all out, send someone back out, turn it back on. It's clearly that effort costs more than $50 to the city. And the thought was that the notice, the $20 fee, might prevent us from having to even go to the shutoff.
In my cover sheet, I had put that there were about 250 shutoff notices monthly, but I was talking this evening to one of the utility gals, and she said I was off on that. She said it's closer to 900.
900 shutoff notices?
So there's a lot of people that are just shoving off the bill, and then there's only 100 that get shut off, but they're just waiting until they get that late notice to pay their bill.
And then they pay it.
Yeah, and so
and
our
so
idea is...
So 800 pay it, 100 don't get shut off.
Yeah, and so our idea is to get them to pay before that. So so hopefully we'll start sending out less, fewer, and fewer of those shut-off notices.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, anything further for Diane? Diane, do you expect to bring...
Okay, I think at the next council meeting, I'll be bringing a resolution on the policies. And then the first meeting in April, there will be a fee schedule resolution. And the late fees will be on that. And I'm hoping for an effective date on the fees to be June 1st, because that gives us 2 months then to send notices out to the public and try to... Get the word out. We'll do it on our website. I'll send an email out. We'll do a mailing. It's really hard. You try to think of the ways that people might see it. And hopefully we'll get word to everyone that this is coming about, so they'll gear up. It'll give them 2 months to gear up to start paying on time.
Well, just a thought. Somebody named Negative Nelly might complain about the fee structure here as proposed tonight. The purpose of this is really to eliminate the need for shutoff entirely and the costs associated with that. And the reality is here, in most cases, that this comes down to a choice As Diane said, you know, the water bill typically gets put in the back of the stack, and the car payment and the credit card gets paid, you know, first because there's higher interest or something like that. And you know, this is not an attempt to by the city to go, you know, let's get citizens. It's an attempt by the city to say, hey, citizens, we have some issues that are impacting staff's time, which ultimately impacts the costs to the other residents. And so the end result here is not to hopefully bring in, you know, X amount of revenue. The end result here is we see a significant drop in our late payments and shutoffs. And so I want that to be very clear that that is the end goal this policy recommendation and fee schedule recommendation.
Yeah, because we do want to make clear that if someone is truly having a financial need, we will work with them. Yeah. We're not here to, you know, kick them when they're down.
Yeah. Councilor Gamble.
Is that piece advertised?
Yeah.
You don't need to say, hey, you know, if you get in touch with us, does that go out in the shutoff notice, or does that go out?
It's on the back of all the bills.
On all the bills.
Yeah.
Okay.
And on the notice that we're sending out, I've already drafted it up, and there's a paragraph just strictly on the payment arrangements. So
great.
People will know that that's still an option for everyone.
All right. Well, thanks, Diane. We'll look forward to that returning.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. We have some discussion here. With regards to address and street name master plan, Mr. Fowler. It is.
This is your favorite topic.
So,
I know it's your favorite.
So we've been here before. I have a map if anybody wants to see if we can project later on if we need to. But at a while ago, I forget if I can open up the agenda back and find what day we did that on. We talked about this before, and it was suggested to bring this back today to have some further discussion on this. And it's pretty much open for discussion from the council. We did get a letter from the chiefs of fire department and police department, and Chief Silva is here in relation to Chief Windsor, if you have any questions. And the quick summary of their letter is, let's go to the regional system rather than the local system so that we can be with the rest of the area at large, so when public safety responders from other areas come into come to help out, they know where they're going, as opposed to, well, the numbers are going, you know, 179 and suddenly we're at, you know, Maple or whatever, and they get lost that way. So we'll open it to discussion.
Okay, we have one line here.
That's a shocker. Who is that person?
Councilmember Hedwig.
We have moved to the bad list.
Yeah.
Councilmember Richard Geary.
Thanks. Obviously a passion of mine for different reasons. I do appreciate the letter. Just a couple comments about that. Ultimately, looking at the letter and to change the entire city to county, I think would kind of defeat the purpose that I wanted to. You would lose the history, you know, and downtown. It's important. Every small town, many small towns in this area have their own numbering system followed by county around because of that historical nature. I think it would be a mistake to lose that. In doing it that way, certainly understand that, you know, in the big scheme of things, that would certainly make it really, really easy. But easier when we respond to things like that. There are already anomalies in different towns. Kirkland, a lot of different towns have their own squad, have their own numbering followed by county outside. Certainly something, if we were to not do an entire change, one of the issues that I saw here was that streets, you know, streets and avenues, you know, typically run east-west, and avenues typically run north-south. And even in our in the course of the county area, that's how it works. But in our legacy area, it certainly doesn't work that way. So were a full change not to take place, perhaps that might be something we would consider, or it'd be a small change where a street might change to a drive or a place or an avenue, if that would actually help law enforcement. So it's maybe something for a future consideration on that, if there was not a full change to be made. I guess I would have a few questions about the system that these are being updated in. As I mentioned before, there's new housing and development will come in. They got to make a change sometime. Maybe a little bit of the process, if you could explain what actually takes place to make a change in the database. And that'd be helpful for me, just maybe just a little bit of the background on, it sounds like a big deal to make changes, if you wouldn't mind. So it's Mike, I'm sorry. We're looking at it. Sorry, Mike's the GIS.
Well, and I'm really not the GIS expert. I'm a GIS advocate, so I'm on your side there.
Indeed.
And as far as what is required or what takes place at a county level, I can't speak to that. I can speak locally that we notice that there's a legacy issue. There is nothing that's created by, in the last probably 20, 30 years, I would think, but it does play a role in emergency response. I assume it plays a role in post office as well. And what we'd like to see is if there is a change that it takes place in the manner that we've recommended, or at least we could be part of a committee to help address those issues. What is happening on a countywide level in every city within the county is we're developing a new CAD computer-aided dispatch, CAD, system, and that uses GIS for routing. In other words, the system will make recommendations based off of locations of apparatus, so it's automatic vehicle locating technology where the system knows where all the apparatus are located, and using algorithms, which of course are based on math, it's going to use GIS technology to conduct a network analysis and make recommendations of which unit should respond to which location. And when there are anomalies in the math database, certainly GIS is all math, it's all data behind the graphic representation of what we see as a map. And when there are math anomalies, the algorithm can't work. That's simple math. So there are ways to overcome that, but they're not the easiest, and it's not recommended by us. So that's really the crux of our issue. We know that there's legacy issues in addressing and street names, and if there was to be a change in the organization, let's just look at it closely and let's do it correctly.
I think that's perfect. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good.
One of the other things that came up to bring us up in the first place is the fact that the MMC does say that we have a uniform code, and clearly we don't have a uniform addressing system. I think there's five. Well, actually, I think we just got rid of the one on Dennis. Did we not just?
Yeah, but it was already the same one, so.
Yeah. Academy Way, Rivermont, downtown, and the rest. So again, maybe there would still be a couple of, although Academy Way is not that, that's only like 1 through 8. I think there's 8 different addresses, so it's not that significant. So again, the statements that I've made in the past, changing, I still think it's a good idea, but it really needs to be balanced with what we've heard from Mr. Fitzgerald and from the chiefs, and there's something about having a small numbering system, having a small town feel, and as we grow, having that sense of place of where you are. And so I think there's a lot of value there. And I did the transportation modeling for a long time. It is a pain in the butt. I worked at a large software company on the east side for a long time. We made maps. I was the transportation guy. We had to click on each exit and enter in information on each one. It's a lot of work, but it does keep people employed. So there's that aspect too. It is a lot of work, and I appreciate that. It would take a lot of work to do this. The cost benefit of it is really, and that's something of it, it's a long term thing. Having Monroe be Monroe centric. So I look at it from that standpoint that I had not really considered the public safety aspect of it. So again, I do appreciate the letter. I guess I'll just leave it at that. I don't know if anybody else has any comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. So tonight's the first night we've heard from anybody really other than Councilmember Deering. Nice to have another perspective. When Councilmember Deering brought this forward, it's always been about that we should have our own identity. And I know that some people in the audience thought, well, that's an awful lot of work and effort to get an identity. And now it sounds like that there's some support on public safety and things like that centered that might shift maybe the rationale. I'm still not sure that we have a good sense for what size project this would be to make a change. It seems massive to me. I mean, to go take everybody in the city of Monroe and get new street signs and new house numbers and everyone change their address seems like insurmountable. Have you been involved with any jurisdictions who have done this before on the scale that we're talking? It's probably why nobody does it, and we have the mess everywhere. Can you guys speak to that at all about what we'd be up against?
And I agree, it would be too costly even to make a wholesale change, but I think what we could do is maybe adopt a standard that we can start new development and fix the problem, you know, as we redo things and improve the process. Because finding an address is one of the most stressful things a firefighter and police officer has to go through. Can you imagine when a child needs a peanut, they're allergic to peanuts and they can't breathe, and you're trying to find the address and can't find it. I mean, we ask firefighters, they see things that would make most of us, you know, in here get sick to our stomach. You ask them what one of the stresses is, and it's getting to the house. And so we've, you know, really invested over the last 5 years of developing our GIS system and having good map books. To have a system where when those aren't available or somebody's trying to get to the address, they know we're hiring a lot of new police officers. You know, there's no system to teach them. Here in Monroe, go find Jake Drive. What's that? But if you tell me in the county where 100th Street is and you give me the first three digits of the address, I can locate the area of the address. So that's what we're talking about. Not going out and doing a wholesale change, but maybe to adopt a process that we can move toward.
Okay. So that brings it a little bit.
Of course.
Thank you.
I think my biggest issue with changes at this point is that our dispatch center is trying to get a new CAD system up and running. We've been working at it for 3 years now. And now to throw this into the mix of it too, I think it's going to delay the project. Not only is it going to delay the project, but means if the cars are going to be dispatched by the closest unit and the like, I can see some real issues. If we were going to do this, I wish it would have been done 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
But technology is such now with this CAD system coming online that I don't want to delay it any longer than it's already been delayed. And this would add, you know, just one more wrinkle to it, that we would have to give new coordinates, new street numbers, things like that. I realize as new developments come online, you know, we need to adopt a system, whether it's the system that you advocate or the countywide system. But we need to adopt something. We need to stick to it. But the change, wholesale change for the city to bring either one side to the other or vice versa, I think would not only be extremely time-consuming, but I think it not only would be costly for the public safety to get it accomplished, but I think it's also going to be costly for the individuals. I don't know how much I'd love to have my address changed without moving, you know, of course. Something needs to be done, but I think it should have been done a long time ago. And I think we ought to pick a system and stick to it for newer developments and life.
So we tried that with new developments and we got pushed back from the post office. It seems like that's even been a challenge. So I guess I'm looking for some direction on how we would go about it. From what I hear, is it sounds like come up with a system of if we were starting from scratch, what it would look like, and then any new development would kind of fit into that schema.
I think we have two systems. I mean, we have our old,
the system, legacy system, and then we have the new GIS Kali system that works well with the GIS. And you know, of course, it's public safety. That's what we would prefer, but we need to choose new developments and the like. And I can't speak for the post office. The way it sounds, they're going to be out of business a few years anyway. You know, so. I think the post office, I think, is a lot of their operations seems, in personal opinion, seems to be in the dark ages. So,
Brent,
okay. Two comments. One is we have created a new problem in the last action that the city council took, because by numbering the houses that are in the new development of Dennis Way on 159th Street with numbers based off of Main and Lewis, when they go to the CAD system, they're going to think they're in Mill Creek. Yeah. So that's, we have to be careful when we start doing those kind of things. The other one is that we can't be as regionally oriented as we want to make things easy, because the developments that we have done in town, the streets are closer together than 330 feet. So the county grid is based on 330 feet. So every 330 feet, it goes up. So 159th Avenue, 330 feet away is 160th Avenue. So things like Jake show up because streets are more often than 100, 330 feet. So you can't do 159th and a half and things like that. One of the comments we received back from the review of Platte of Eaglemont was they had two streets and they called them that are closer together than 330 feet. And they called them both, I think it was 135th. One was street, one was place, and we were told that that wasn't a good thing, because that's too confusing, because then if someone says, I'm at, you know, 195, 64, 135th, which one do you go to? So that's where the name streets come from, and also diagonal streets, curvy streets, things like that. So if we, you know, if we change our design standards, which is kind of hard to do when you're not on a flat plane of, you know, Salt Lake City, which really has nice grids, really wide streets. You know, when you have hills and valleys and creeks and things like that, you end up with the streets that aren't a nice grid pattern. Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Hamford.
Correct. Councilmember Gamble first.
Thank you, sir. Councilmember Gamble.
Thanks for that, Brad, the extra info there. But I do think that the primary standard, the county way, would be the way to go. I mean, Kurt knows how I feel about this issue.
Sure.
And, I mean, and I get it, because, you know, as a former service technician, I hated streets. You know, you give me the addresses, and I could know exactly where, you know, I was going. But I think also, you know, when we look at the public safety and we look at sharing of resources, or even the most, you know, recent as yesterday, I think we had several engines in here for surrounding areas in my neighborhood. As a matter of fact, the house right up the road, you know, those extra seconds can make a lot of difference. And so sometimes I get the identity piece, but from a public safety, you know, perspective, in some regards, the identity can be a bad thing. So just a difference. So I'm very much in favor of the county grid system as a primary, with, you know, obviously there's going to be some exceptions. So, but you knew that.
So no Gearing Street.
No Gearing Street.
Well, you know, that's that could be in the East West.
All right. Councilmember Hamford.
Yes. So this might be a question for Brad, but what do all the other cities in the Snohomish County area near us run off of? The county system?
No, same as us. Downtown Sultan is the
First Street,
the legacy city system, and the newer stuff out farther away is county grid.
Lake Stevens?
Same.
Snohomish?
Yeah.
Edmonds?
Everett's that way. I think Matt Lake Terrace mostly is regional grid, because they never really had a downtown. Yeah.
Councilmember Kedman.
Thank you, Brad, for bringing up Dennis Street? No, what's it?
159th Street.
Okay. Yeah, because I was thinking that as we're going through this process, that we just had made that decision. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure if there was anything we would look at with that at this point, what we're in right now. And thank you, Chiefs, for coming. It helps to have another perspective. Are you guys, so for new development, which is what's happening now, so this is actually a timely, you know, it's timely to come and figure out a standardized process. So you're agreeing to go with the countywide GIS, that's your recommendation? Or would you also possibly consider kind of a combination, a standardized process, but as you listed in here, like the north-south is drive and ave, the street and place are east and west, and then you had a couple other things in here about the blocks. So is it, can there be something similar to that? Is that fully the GIS system, or is that something we could do? Is that midway? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand the question, and it's a good point. I think city staff, there's no doubt, are perfectly capable. What we're saying is we would be glad to be involved in the conversation.
Sure.
And if there was a committee that were formed, we'd be glad to be a participant on such a committee. I don't know that we have all the answers to say this is how it should be, just that
right.
we want to be involved in that
sure.
decision, or at least garner input.
Yeah. No, I think that's wise to have you guys in the discussion. Brad, when they talked about before it was West Main, it was what?
164.
Okay, so when they had that discussion to get toward the downtown, make it part of the downtown grid instead of staying on the county, because that was on the county. Did this conversation happen, or when did that happen? Because we've changed it, and
it's about 2002-ish, probably.
Okay. And I had talked to a couple of business owners who are on West Main, and they were frustrated that it changed to the downtown away from what it was. So I guess that's why, as we move forward in this, I think it's really important that we have a standardized process for new development, and we be careful about making changes that might have already happened and change again for downtown area. And then I think it's very important to involve, obviously, other people in the discussion. So I think this needs to happen sooner than later, though, the discussion, because we are having new development happening. And we just made a decision, I don't know, a month ago on a new development, what the addresses were going to be. So I don't know if you have a suggestion, Brad, for a timeline on this. He does.
Okay. Two things. I forgot to mention earlier is that we did discuss this with the city attorney as requested last time we talked about this. He said that there is nothing in state law or anywhere that says how you have to do it. All it says is you have to have a system to do it. The uniformness of the mention in 12.28 is completely arbitrary up to what the city council's intention was at the time that it was adopted in 1986, I think it was, which was the two plus system approach, which the stuff that was already addressed was done and everything else new was going to be the county grid or the regional grid. And our current policy is that all new developments outside of the area that was outlined in blue, I think, in your packet last time, would be on the regional grid. To the extent possible, except for curvy streets and things like that, which don't fit because they're not grid streets.
Okay, so that's already our policy.
That's already our policy.
Okay.
Councilor Gear.
Thank you. Brett, you had made mention of the Dennis addition. One of the, it was my understanding that everything in there was essentially a new street, new houses.
No, not 159th.
So when we did that, the what I understood the action to be, what my intent for that action would be, anything that's getting built in that area would be, I mean, it's not just city numbering. I mean, obviously 159th doesn't fit in city numbers. So it would be appropriate, I would think, to either change that segment of the street to something else to match. Otherwise, you're going to find something just like that. If Dennis Way and the little offshoots are going to have, and I don't have the map in front of me, so I can't remember exactly how many little, if there were cul-de-sacs that
would be. No, Dennis Way is just 179, which goes out to 179.
It either smooth out some of this jagged blue line, because you've got that, you're on Park Lane, and you come down, you're on city numbers, you got 159th, which is county, and then you go on Lawrence, which is back to city. I mean, even just to get from there to there, you go from city to county to city. A much lesser impact for public safety, and essentially clean up some of these type of things. Might be just to smooth out the blue line a little bit, expand it in just a couple areas where you're going to impact a lot less people, and you're not going to impact public safety. And a policy perhaps where, and then kind of what I was trying to get to last time, if you're developing, if you're infilling in the older area of town, you should get a legacy city address. It doesn't make sense to have a county address right in the middle of the city. I think that even further, you know, would confuse them, and the algorithms are not going to run smoothly. Not at all. And specifically, I mean, I can see it even here zoomed out. I mean, that blue line jogs all the way in from 159th and then comes back. I think we should consider smoothing a couple of those out a little bit. Yes, it does impact a few people, but I think that in and of itself is going to we'll have less confusion, and certainly as you know, there may be more infilling coming in this particular area. If that's a part of the policy that we implement, anything outside of the blue area gets county, let's say, anything inside still gets a city address. That jagged line, I think, is part, you know, it could be part of the problem. So maybe in an anomaly on 159th, where we do change a couple, consider changing a couple extra houses to make sure that you can get from Park Street to Lawrence and not have to go city, county, city. That to me is an anomaly that would be worth fixing, that's going to have a lesser impact from what we've heard from this letter tonight as well. So ultimately, my dream is crushed. I still think it's a good idea, but I do understand it. The cost was always going to be big, and whether you get a phased approach or not, it is a big change. I do think there are some small changes that we need to make. The jagged blue line does cause trouble, ultimately, and we need to look at some areas. And maybe if we change section 12-28 to say an agreed upon number and system rather than uniform, I don't know. Maybe a small wording change might be appropriate as well.
There is hereby established an addressing system.
An addressing system, exactly, rather than the word uniform. So, folks have it on Canada. Some of these things just aren't worth the time to change ultimately. But I do think there are a number of areas in which we could reduce some confusion by just a little bit of expansion of the city agreement for further discussion open. But if there is an issue with 159th, I do think that needs to be addressed. And I would hope that any house that's going to have a three-digit number shouldn't be on a street that's 159th. And just city numbering to me means it's got a city, you know. The street is also a city street, and not a county numbered street or whatever it is, regional numbered street. I hope we can address that to not, since it's a small segment, not further confuse. I hadn't realized that was an issue until you brought it up tonight, so appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. It seems that we have an offer from the police department, the fire department, to work. Mm-hmm. And maybe having a subcommittee form to go out and study this and come back with a recommendation makes more sense. You're clearly more passionate about it and more understanding than I am, so I would offer to not be on that committee. But there are people that know a lot about this and could come and get all the information and maybe present back to council, so that would be my recommendation, that we do that. And I don't know what's involved with getting that.
And I don't need to be on it. There may be something appropriate for the public works and transportation group too. There's already a council committee, so I have an interest regardless. I don't need to be on it.
No, you're agreeing. Now you're agreeing.
I think there are some things that will. This jagged blue line does cause some trouble. There are some tweaks that can be made to it that I think will help. And along 159th, as Brad pointed out, I think is one of those. Anyway, in response to that, I think maybe the committee, and I think, whoever's on that committee, that might be a good place to. Absolutely.
All right, Councilor Henry.
Yeah, my thoughts are just whatever is most safe in dealing with the 159th and then for the future. So my thoughts would be safety is priority, not so much the city, you know, numbering. Now, knowing now what we know, having safety is the number one thing. Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Cam.
Thank you. While I appreciate the opinion about the Transportation Committee, I really think that a subcommittee would be a better move because it is so detailed and has so much information and so many parties involved. I think it really would require much more detail and detail-oriented process. That's just my opinion. But whatever the council decides.
Second.
Sorry, we're just not exceptional. There's no motion.
Kurt
and Jason.
Not volunteers.
Thomas did. Councilmember
Thomas did. Let's have Brad take a look at that with, in conjunction with both the fire department and the police department, just kind of get an idea of the scope. The realities, we've got some major updates and so forth in terms of comp plan, transportation, parks. There's a lot going on, so let's see what that both waiting in WEIGH whatever if it's something that can be done in conjunction with the comprehensive plan update for 2015, maybe let's just take a look and see what the actual the scope is going to be, and then we can come back and certainly we can create an ad hoc committee or an advisory committee with a member of council or somebody from the community along with representatives from police and fire and public works. So, but let's start there with the scope of work, kind of get an idea of what that looks like in comparison and or conjunction with the other comp plan updates that we have. So coming soon. Okay. Anything else? Is that all right with council? We do that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Great.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. Very good. Well, we are on to department reports. Hope that you were able to take a look at the reports that were part of your packet online tonight. But I will ask members of the staff who are here this evening if there's anything additional they'd like to share with the council. Now's your time. Jeff, anything tonight?
No.
All right, Ben?
No.
Mike?
No.
All right, Chief Silva?
No.
All right.
Mike?
Okay.
Commissioners last night at their meeting approved a resolution to support the Valley General Hospital as it impacts our operations. 82% of our transport to the Valley General Hospital. And if that ER closes, we'll have to take our patients to Evergreen or DeCroix, which will add 50 minutes round trip transport time, plus our EMTs and paramedics will be writing the reports at the hospital, which will be outside our response area. We're currently doing most of the report writing in our response area. If there's a call, they can respond. So that's something that they did last night.
Thank you.
Valley General plays an important part. I mean, recently we had the Providence Center. Well, now it's, what, three stories? Two stories? How many stories? Two stories. Looks like three. Going into the North Kelsey area, and we were very excited about that. And they certainly play an important role in medical care. But so does Valley General. And I want to be sure that people understand that as Chief just mentioned, there are going to be some considerable costs if some things are changed there. What I would ask the general public is to give considerable thought to the importance that it plays in our community and the support that it needs. With that, we have a ballot measure that's coming up on, is it April?
April.
It's time for folks to ask themselves, is this important? I guess my answer would be that it is. We've had to utilize their services, the ER room, number of occasions, been fortunate not to have to spend any nights there, but others are not so fortunate. So thanks, Chief. Appreciate that. Mike, anything since you haven't been here, I don't think, forever. So I'm trying not to be.
It's nice to come to a council meeting where it's, the audience is just not filled with a bunch of people talking about one issue. It's nice to be here tonight in that atmosphere.
Good. Chief Quinter, anything?
Yes, I want to. First of all, I want to express my great disappointment that I wasn't allowed to expound upon the 0.1% tax. I did have a question asked last time, and I said I would get back, and here's the answer. And it had to do with response times, and what you also see on there, you're seeing response times for all calls, not just emergency calls. That's why it's a higher number. Emergency calls, our goals are less than 3 minutes. And lastly, Sergeant Clock returned to work on Monday, and we're very happy for that.
That's good news. Thank you, Chief. Brett? I normally go around, but I'm just going to throw it out to council in general. Anything to report from council members? Council Member Gary?
Yeah, I'd just like to say thanks. Great job, the fire department. There was a fire up on the hill, and nobody was hurt, and everybody got evacuated. And a lot of friends up there they expressed their thanks as well. They really were impressed, and it's a bummer. And not just a bummer, it's tragic. Everybody loses their home, and I certainly hope never to be in that situation, watch the smoke and saw the helicopters, and just appreciate what you guys do, saving people's homes, and putting yourself in harm's way for other people. And the police obviously as well. That was, you can see the flames from Main Street, and it was flat out there. So thanks for what you guys do. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just echo. Well, first echo Councilman Gary. Thank you. I was in my neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right.
The house of the little children that live there goes to school with my daughter, who's in the audience tonight. So, just, you know, great job all around. He was in school today. From what I understand, was upbeat, talking about his new house. And the firemen that were there. So, thank you very, very much. The other thing I just would tack on to what the chief said about Valley General and April 23rd, full support, personally, and just the importance that it is to the community, and a lot of similar situations. Using my daughter again, but she had a friend that probably would have lost her arm if that hospital was not there. They performed an emergency surgery, couldn't get her two children's in time, even through a medevac airlift. And the surgeons right there performed it over the phone with guidance from Children's. We really do have, some just fantastic people that work over there, and have been there a couple other times for other reasons. So yes, absolutely, in support, and hope that the community really does take this ballot measure seriously.
Thank you. Councilmember Goodman.
Thank you. Last Wednesday night, I attended the United Way celebration for all volunteers and all the United Way campaign. And there was over 600 people at Comcast Arena. It was a great event. And just kudos to the City of Monroe staff and Sherry Hurst. They were nominated, if you didn't know, as a mid-sized campaign or a small campaign. But it was great to see the City of Monroe nominated at that function. So kudos to the staff and the mayor for supporting United Way. It's a great, great organization.
Where was the event held?
Concrete.
Sorry.
Nothing from me this evening, City Administrator Brett.
Just a quick reminder to council and any staff members that are interested on Thursday night, 5 o'clock, at Clearview Wine and Spirits, is the chamber ambassadors meeting.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And then they may have the draft agenda for March 19th, 2013.
So I'll be attending. I don't know who else will.
Perfect.
Is there any issue with four or
If I can get head count now, after the number, we're fine.
I'm unable to attend.
So it looks like it's one.
Okay.
Perfect. I'll let her know. Thank you. Announcements and presentations. We have a proclamation. Tuesday Include Day, March 20th, 2013. Number two, Music Fest update. Keith Rock will be back to give council an update. We have the consent agenda and under new business, number one, discuss proposed ethic code change, or ethic code amendments, excuse me. Number two, discuss downtown parking. Number three, approve planning commission program. Under final action number one, resolution adopting utility billing policies, and the draft agenda for March 26th, 2013. Any additions or deletions? We were just mentioning that we were going to be talking about the restrooms at downtown and at the Rotary Field, and so wanted to say that was not under topic. We were going to talk about that.
Okay.
So it's on the 19th. We're going to group all those discussions together because they're kind of tied in.
I have an item to add.
Okay. Perfect.
Given that we've had two advisory votes on red light cameras, which are overwhelmingly people are not in favor of continuing the contract, I think it's appropriate to have a resolution come back where we can state that we don't intend to renew the red light camera contract. I know it doesn't run out to the end of the year. Quite frankly, I don't see there's any reason to delay stating our intent. We have over 66% one time and over 70% the next. It's very clear that the public is not interested in having this move forward. I think it's appropriate to state our intent. I don't think we need to wait till fall to say that we're not going to do it. So I would like to at least have that on the agenda for next week, a resolution, and if nothing else for discussion, but we'd love to vote on that next week. Have time to put something like that together. If someone else would be interested in supporting that,
I'll support.
Thank you for your
support. I got you. So what we'll look at is we'll check with Zach as well. There is some specific language with regards to notification, and so we'll check to just be sure. I think a resolution just to reiterate the council's intent not to, I don't think will, you know, should be a problem.
Intent is not to ruffle feathers. Intent is
yes. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have it.
Thank you.
I'll have to reach out to the attorney and make sure that they can get put together in that time frame, but we'll get on here as soon as possible.
I just don't see any reason to delay.
Understood.
No political matter either, so it's good.
Okay. Okay. I think that is all that we have this evening. Thank you very much for your participation, input, discussion. With that said, meeting is down here.
We didn't indicate which one you want to go. Do you have this?
brought that up.
Yeah.